My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. Amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game.
Hey, mate,
no rain.
And now it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How are you, JD?
I don't know. We'll see how this show plays out, and you tell me.
Yeah, we'll see if your country bumpkin internet works tonight.
We're bomb.
We'll see how it works.
Bye. My wife works from home, right? I's pretty much at this, and there's like alternative where we live. Hot spot today.
Yeah. We caught like half of that. It's going to be one of those nights, folks, where JD's internet is just in and out. I just got done watching the main event of All Out. So here's what happened on my Saturday. WWE and AEW got to stop doing this head-to-head shit. Now, I know that WWE did it to try to take away from AEW. They will deny it, and ESPN came out and denied that that was the case. That was not the reason why the show was scheduled. But if they're going to go on the same day, I would much rather them do it at the same time. Because I can't do both in the same day. Like, that's just not possible. So I tried to watch a little bit of All Out today, because yesterday All Out comes on at 3:00 in the afternoon. like I got shit to do. I, you know, I got family stuff to do. Like being on in the middle of a Saturday is like, for a guy with like a wife and kids and like stuff he has to get done, that was a little bit tough for me. So I, my nieces have soccer on Saturday. So, my whole family, we all went to go and watch them play soccer for a while. We went out to eat. We did a bunch of different things all throughout the day, and none of it was revolved around me just sitting there watching television. Although, like, if Dad got his way, like, I would just be a slug on the couch watching wrestling all day. But unfortunately, that's just not how life works in the real world. And had it been come on at 7 p.m. head-to-head with WrestlePalooza, I would have just watched All Out instead of WrestlePalooza. But it wasn't on, and I didn't have access to it at the time. My cousin was able to put it on Plex later in the evening. And, so I just watched it. I just watched WrestlePalooza because I was able to get access to ESPN Unlimited fairly easily. I know a lot of people said that they had trouble with it, but I had no trouble whatsoever because I just got a free trial for Fubo. And on the site, it says, click here for ESPN Unlimited access. Click there. Logged into my ESPN account. And sure enough, there it was. And I got home a little after 7 when the Lesnar and Cena match had already started, created a whole Fubo account, linked it to my ESPN, and you know, within like I did that within like 3 minutes and was able to get onto it. So I know a lot of boomers had some issues with it, but I was able to figure it out pretty fucking easily. And shout out Cousin Joe for the hookup on that with that idea. I had no idea that I could do that with Fubo. So that worked out pretty good. So instead of like finding, you know, a way to watch all, I guess I could have spent the money to watch All Out, but I'm not doing that because, you know, I'm just not doing that. Not that it wouldn't be worth $50, but I was just, yeah. I'll take a free show any day. So I ended up watching WrestlePalooza from start to finish. For the first time, I think I sat down and watched an entire WWE show from start to finish in a while. I think the last one, it might have been Mania. I don't think I watched both nights of Mania all the way through. I watched one. I have to go back to listen to the podcast. I'm trying to remember which one I watched all the way through, but I sat, watched it from front to back. And then today, of course, was another family day. So when JD comes back, he's going to get a kick out of this. But we decided to go to a new church today. And I did not have any part in this decision. This was just something that my wife wanted to do. We had been going to one and it's not working out. And not anything controversial or anything like that. It's just, you know, not feeling it. And so she was looking around for another new church, and she had told me that we were doing this, but of course I'm not paying attention. And, you know, I was like, well, okay, well, I don't care where it's at. Just what time? And she said, okay, we got to be there by 10. I was like, okay, perfect. How far away is it? She goes, it's 15 minutes. It's like, oh, that's easy. No problem. We get in the truck. Kids are all loaded up. And I was like, okay, where is this place? And she goes, look up Impact Church. I was like, Impact? She's like, yes, Impact Church. I was just like, that's a name of a church. I was like, I don't know if we should go to this church. She's like, well, why not? And I was like, you know, my podcast is called Brace for Impact, and it's dedicated to a television show called Impact. And Impact does not have a great reputation for being something that is something that a lot of people want to be a part of. And she's like, oh man, really? I was like, yeah. So my podcast is named Impact. The TV show is called Impact. And now we're going to Impact Church. This is probably not going to be a good thing. And so I kind of set the tone right away, and it was not a good tone. And we get there, and the church was fine. It was a nice church. I was expecting there to be a bunch of production miscues and, you know, like people out of place, a bunch of chaos, maybe some fights breaking out or something in the parking lot. But, no, it was a fine church. It was called Impact Church, and we ended up having a good time. But, So yeah, I'd come back. You know, and then I do the football thing. Football, like afternoon football, is what I do on Sundays. And so, and then I got to watch the 49ers play, and we got a dub. So 49ers are undefeated, the 3-0. I think the Chicago Bears got a victory over the Dallas Cowboys, so that's fun. Anytime the Cowboys lose, I think that's a bonus, really.
And anytime the Bears win, it's a miracle.
Yeah, the Bears beat the Cowboys today, which is wild. So. I would have bet money that the Cowboys would have won that game, but the Bears took it. So, JD, did you catch the story about me going to a church called Impact Church today?
Yeah, I did. I think it's ironic.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Like God said, this is what he needs.
Yeah. I think Lucha Doncic said, he goes, you're going to walk in there. They're going to be playing We Own the Night, like the church band. I was like,
do they still play We Own the Night on Impact?
No, they don't. They do the Cross the Line song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like they went back to the OG Cross the Line. But so I was telling this long story so that way you can get your stuff set up. But I was able to watch most of All Out. I got to see the most important parts of All Out. The only match that I have not gotten to watch yet that I feel I really do want to watch is Darby and Moxley. But I did not prioritize that tonight, but that I will get a chance to watch that here pretty soon. But what I will do right now is just go through the results, and then I'll do the results of Wrestlepalooza, and then we'll get to the top stories. But on the pre-show, the Ops defeated the Workhorsemen. Why was this even a match on a show? I don't quite understand that. Like, the Ops are pushed guys and the Workhorsemen are, like, they're fine wrestlers. I think they're Carolina guys, so shout out DPW, respect. But the Ops won. I think this was on the tailgate show, so I don't guess it really matters. Daniel Garcia defeated Katsuyori Shibata. You know what? I had high hopes for Shibata whenever he got into AEW, and I don't think that they have treated him well. Maybe that's me overvaluing Shibata, but I don't know. Him like losing to Daniel Garcia on the pre-show, I'm just like, I don't know. Shibata at one point was like my favorite wrestler, so maybe I'm just overvaluing him. But he gets beaten by Daniel Garcia with a God style pile driver. Daniel Garcia obviously getting a renewed push. He just turned heel. So
okay, a couple things. So, did you get that, or did my internet get?
You're cutting in and out. You might as well just do your cell phone, dude.
Bro, I'm sitting right next to the Wi-Fi thing, and it.
Yeah, at some point you might have to look into hardwiring your internet into your computer. I don't know if that's even possible, but I would say just for now, just go back to the cell phone, and then we'll just move forward from there. And I'm gonna run through these results. But Garcia gets the victory there. Then we got Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, and Hologram. They defeated the Frat House. Griff, Garrison, Cole Carter, and Preston Vance. What the hell is the Frat House? But Preston Vance, you know, Preston Vance, well, I thought he was going to be a dude at one point. I thought he was, like, going to be a guy. And he just never really made it. And that's a shame. I thought he would end up being a guy at one point, and it just never happened for the guy. So that sucks. Well, I got to DM JD this. I got to send a DM to JD real quick and give him the link to the show. Here we go. All right. And then I'm going to text JD that I sent him the link. The new Mike and JD show, the new and improved. The new and improved. We gotta work on old JD's internet there. Maybe one day. We'll see. All right. Willow Nightingale, Mina Shirakawa, Aminata, and Harley Cameron versus Megan Bain, Penelope Ford, Julia Hart, and Sky Blue in a tornado tailgate brawl. Nightingale's team won. So there you go. Main card. So this is where I picked up Adam Copeland and Christian Cage versus FTR. Beth Copeland, Beth Phoenix. I thought Beth Phoenix was, I thought she had that name before she was in the WWE. but she can't use the name Beth Phoenix. So they were calling her Beth Copeland. I thought that was weird. But she comes out, she's looking jacked, as per usual. She's a star. She came out and took out old Stokely Hathaway. And Copeland and Cage got the victory after Copeland speared Wheeler. That the match was fine. It was a three boy. I would probably go like a hard three on that one, especially considering the rest of the matches that happened on the show. It was a very WWE style match, to include a spot where Adam Copeland did the five knuckle shuffle and hit the FU on one of the FTR guys, which elicited a Cena chant, a John Cena chant at an AEW show. And a lot of the AEW fans were really upset by that. A lot of AEW fans that listened to the show were really, really mad. And I found that to be endlessly entertaining how mad they were. It was fantastic. What do you think about John Cena getting a chant at an AEW show?
I don't know. It's John Cena. Like, there was a time I might have gotten all poopy pantsed about it, but it's like, I don't know. The dude's on his retirement tour. Like, it's Adam Copeland. Like, you know, you're going to get WWE styled stuff with him. I don't know. Like, Canadian crowd, man, they're going to do what they do. I just didn't. There's so many more things in life I need to be angry about than whether or not John Cena should have gotten a chance at an AEW show. Like, honest to God, bro, who fucking cares? I just don't care.
It's not a big deal. You know, it was a receipt because Cena did a tribute to Edge in one of his previous matches, in the match against Cody at SummerSlam. And so this was Edge's first opportunity to show his old rival respect. They did have a bunch of matches in the WWE. And I'm sure they're like pretty tight.
Am I supposed to get mad when Will Ospreay does a Styles Clash now? No. I mean, there's a reason for that. It's him, the former New Japan foreign ace, showing love to another former New Japan foreign ace. I'm saying foreign ace. That's a lot of F's to say. Like, it's just, this is what wrestling is. Why do I, like, MJF does a Crossroads sometimes. Like, this is wrestling. I don't understand why I have to be mad about that. Like, yeah. I don't like WWE. I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah. Eddie Kingston took on Large Bill. Of course, there was your interferences and all that stuff. After the match, believe it or not, there was so the FTR match, after that match, Nick Wayne and Mother Wayne came out, distracted Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. FTR then beat them down, and they did the spike pile driver on Beth. So there you go.
Yeah,
they're going to continue that feud, clearly. Eddie Kingston versus Big Bill. Kingston won via pinfall with a back fist. Post-match, Keith attacked Kingston and lights out. Revealed an H symbol. Hook returned. So now we got a Hook forming an alliance with Eddie Kingston. So maybe they'll finally make Hook interesting. I don't know. We'll see.
Hook was more interesting when he said less and did less. Like, now they're trying to, like, and I get it. You have to kind of well-round a character sometimes, but I don't know. I don't think he's got it.
I don't think so either. I think, the guy never wrestles. it's like, at some point, you have to wrestle, right? And they're hiding this guy. And he's not out there. He's not out there working indies, getting himself better. He started, I think, around the same time as Dominic Mysterio, but Dominic wrestles four times a week. That's why he's gotten so much better. This guy never wrestles and doesn't cut promos. And when he does cut promos, you can tell that it's not what he's there for. And so he doesn't, I don't know, the guy just doesn't do much. I'm not interested.
Dominic's a lot older than Hook is too. There's like a good 4 years between Dominic and Hook, quite frankly. And I do agree with you. I do think that he does. WWE's lack of schedule, but it's not like WWE's running a ton of house shows now. But Dominic's had a lot more matches than Hook has, and there is something to be said for AEW's youth development. Hook's one of those guys who should have had like a tour in New Japan by now. Like, it still bothers me that we're 6 years into this and Tony doesn't send his young guys off to do stuff in Japan with one of his partner promotions, like, and see, or Mexico. It seems like a no-brainer at this point, but I don't know. It's not going to happen. I don't get it.
Yeah. He's doing the opposite of what WWE's doing. He's sending his stars. So, and like WWE's sending their NXT talent. Like NXT talent's always on TNA. And they're sending, I just got the press release from Justin Nipper today. They're sending a couple of NXT stars to, sending to Noah, right? Justin made that announcement today. So, I think that they should, I think WWE should send their stars too, but they're focused on sending their younger talent. I just don't see AEW doing that. I think that's like a, probably an area that they could strengthen is, beefing up their young talent. But which we'll get to in the main event, because that clearly contradicts everything that we're talking about right now with their young talent shining in the main event. But, so I did watch this one, MJF versus Mark Briscoe in a tables and tax match. A little tacky. a little tacky. I would say billions of thumbtacks. These guys are so good. I think Mike's opinion, there was a lot of violence on this show. These guys probably could have had, like, these guys are so good. I don't think they needed to do all this, but they did, and it was fine. It wasn't a bad match by any means. Look who's in the match, but they had to work around the tables and the tacks when I just felt like they probably could have done better without all that, like Mike's opinion. But still a pretty good match, and Briscoe won. I think that's cool, and he won clean. He got the J Driller on some tacks after a bunch of foggy bows. Did not get the job done. He did the J Driller and he had to do the J Driller because MJF was taking shots at his dead brother. Which, you know, I think another part of AEW they could clean up is stay away from the dead people, especially ones that worked for you. They got kids, and their kids are going to watch that stuff, and you might think they're okay with it, but one day they're going to tell you they're not. Trust me on that one. So,
yeah, okay. I'm a hot topic here. Hot topic.
Yeah,
I think we need to talk about more dead people in professional wrestling. I think that Jay Briscoe specifically would have been okay with that. You know, yeah. I think that he's working with his brother, he being Max, working with Mark out there. And I think Mark is of the mind that whatever keeps his brother's memory alive is better than... There's two ways to handle, like, death in all aspects. Either you talk about them a lot, and, like talking about them brings the memory, and the memory keeps them alive spiritually, or you don't talk about them at all. And I am of the mind that we are not to determine how people should grieve and how people should work through their grief, and how people should deal with the dead. The Briscoe family were a wrestling family, and I think that as long as Mark is cool with it, and if there were problems, I think there would be. But I mean, and to be honest with you, I think those kids have a lot harder, especially the ones that were in the accident with their father when it happened, have a lot more harsh things to work through than silly pro wrestling angles.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it, especially with those kids, everything they got going through. This is something that they just don't need. And these guys are so good, you don't even have to go there. But I think MJF feels like he has to go there, and Christian Cage, like, that's just their characters. They have to go there, but at some point an adult's going to have to step up and be like, we're so much better than this, we don't need to do it. But and you can still talk about someone without, like, making fun of the fact that they're dead. Like, you can talk about how great they were, right? Yeah, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like they've done it so much, it's old. It's just gotten old to me. Like, Christian Cage, it just got old after a while. And if anybody in that company has a dead dad, he's going after him, right? So,
why is it the only place villains can't be villainous is professional wrestling? Like, we have to make sure that our villains are so sanitized and squeaky. Like, I don't mind a villain doing something that makes me feel gross and kind of uncomfortable, because that's
what villains do. I agree. I agree with that. If you know, because, like, in movies, when you're talking about fictional characters, when these fictional characters die and the other fictional character brings that up in the movie, I think that's brilliant. Wrestling, it gets a little weird because these are actually real people sometimes, and so, you know, and they got kids, right? Like, it's weird. Like, I know Jay Briscoe, I know that's not his real name, but his kids are still there. Like, everybody knows who we're talking about, so it's just a little weird. I think we could probably scale that back a little bit. I was in the lead up to it, I was just thinking about his kids. There's been a lot of death and destruction happening in the country lately, and I was just like, you know, we probably need to cut back on some of this shit. I think MJF's better than that. Or maybe he doesn't think he is. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I just don't think he has to go there. I don't know. He's a talented guy. And the match was good. The match was fun. Hurt Syndicate didn't watch that, didn't care about it. The Demand ended up winning. The Demand would be Ricochet, Bishop Khan, and Taya Leone, or Toa Leona. Remember Taya Leone from
I had a thing for Taya Leone when I was in high school.
Same. Yeah.
She had a fastball, man. She had quite a fastball.
Yeah. Yeah, but Ricochet pinned MVP. You know, there's a rumor floating around a while ago. Those guys were going to be out by November. They technically lost their last match on pay-per-view. They didn't get pinned, of course, because these guys are not doing jobs. And then MVP loses this month. I don't know. There was also a rumor going around that they're adding new members to the crew, and some people are pointing towards the fact that Private Party may be on the sauce now, because they showed some pictures of them being jacked lately. Like, they're out of the company, and you know, AEW doesn't have a wellness policy anyway, so they could have been doing it the whole time. But you know, these guys are huge now, apparently. So I don't know what to make of this thing, but you know, Hurt Syndicate could be out. I don't know.
Like, it's been a weird run. They're definitely over. But it might be, I don't know. Like, I don't hate the idea of like quick runs. Like, I know in pro wrestling bad lately, everyone has to have a 9-year run, or like you're disloyal to the company and therefore you must be banished. Like, I don't, if they're in for a year and they do some stuff and it's fun and have good matches and they move on, okay, move on to the next territory. I don't know. I guess maybe TNA, but I don't know. Like, if they want to be out, let's be out. If not, let's do something new.
Yeah. Mercedes Moné defeated a Riho to retain the TBS title. She got an eye rake and a lung blower. So there you go. Riho probably going to be gone for another year. Okada, Takeshita, and Masa Dorada for the AEW Unified title. Okada retained, pinning Dorada. John Moxley and Darby Allin in a coffin match. Moxley won when Pac returned. Powerbombed Allin onto the coffin and bagged him, and Moxley closed it. At one point, Moxley got set on fire. So there you go. Timeless Toni Storm lost the AEW Women's Championship in a four-way, losing via pinfall to Chris Statlander. So Chris Statlander is the new AEW Women's Champion. Goddamn, this is a long show. Brodito versus the Young Bucks versus the Don Callis family versus Jet Speed in a ladder match for the tag titles. Brodito retained when they retrieved the titles. So there you go. Afterwards, the Jurassic Express. Jungle Boy is back and his dinosaur is back. Mr. Slow Kicks himself, Luchasaurus. They did the whole Tarzan boy. They came in and attacked the Young Bucks. What do you make of Jurassic Express making a comeback here?
My kid likes the theme song. So yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like we've been there, done that. And I feel like this kind of proves that Jack Perry doesn't have much else, unless this version of which by definition, this version of Jurassic Express has to be different than the last one. Yeah. So my initial instinct is to go, they're just retreading. But if they're able to kind of revitalize the tag team, like I look at, this is going to be funny. I look at like what the Usos were like a decade ago compared to what they were, you know, they were able to reinvent themselves. I'm not saying they're going to be that by any stretch. I'm just saying if they can find a way to reinvent the act a little bit, perhaps it can work. Otherwise, you know, I just don't know what either of those two bring to the table in this version of AEW.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they do. I had lost complete interest in Jungle Boy. I thought he did have some moments where I thought he was a good heel, but very clearly it just didn't work. And so he had to take some more time off, and now he's back. He's turned babyface. Went back to the beginning. Maybe they'll do a whole redo on this. But I don't know. We'll see. I just have not been impressed with Luchasaurus in a long time. Like the guy was, I thought he was pretty good starting out, and then he got hurt. And then when he come back, he was several steps slower. And like, he does these slow kicks. And even when he's slapping his own ass, which is something that a lot of these kids do these days, is like, when you kick, you got to slap your own butt. Right. When he does it, it's just so fucking obvious. It's like, I got no time for this guy. He does a good moonsault. That's cute. He's very tall. Does it. Does the kicks. Those are cool. But when he's slapping his own ass, I say, I'm not interested. Sorry, dude. Like, everybody can see you. Like, we can see you, dude. Stop it. And he's more blatant than everybody else.
Because he's slower. I don't know. Actually, in 2019, 2020. Now, I don't know, man. I don't. Is there a massive delay?
I can't hear a word you're saying, man. Hangman Adam Page versus Kyle Fletcher, the main event. I thought this main event was fantastic. Kyle Fletcher is a star. Eventually, they're going to have to put the title on this guy. I think within like a year or two, he is going to be the world champion of the company. This, as far as a marquee main event, very clearly this was not a marquee main event because this is Kyle Fletcher's first time. But if you're like a sicko and you've just been watching this guy grow toward when he was, you know, part of Aussie Open, and now he's, you know, kind of working his way up. This is his first time being in a main event. I thought he killed it. And maybe they lost some pay-per-view bias because he was in the main event, but I think they're going to end up getting paid for it in the long run because I think he's so fucking good. Adam Page won with the dead eye. One criticism is they kept dropping this fucking Fletcher on his head, man. It's just like the guy's so young. You just lost Will Ospreay to neck issues. Like, maybe don't let him like land on his head so much. Like, come on, what are we doing?
Yeah, you could probably lose. Is that better, by the way?
Yeah.
That's my microphone. Okay. Yeah, so I think you don't have to do the amount of head drops that are common back in the day. We don't need a Misawa situation, especially when we know that you can get so much more done just back bumping. Kyle Fletcher, like, they talk about, oh, AEW doesn't have any good young talent. They're just all vanilla midgets. And then you got this jacked-ass 6'4 guy with a shit ton of charisma who is insanely athletic. And I'm like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Like, Kyle Fletcher is a star.
Yeah, he really is. Like, he's going to be a guy that they can build this company around for a long time. And they're down some talent right now. Yeah. They like, you know, Kenny Omega's gone again. He took some time off. Swerve's out for a while. Ospreay's out for a while. Adam Cole, I don't know if he's ever going to wrestle again. You know, so they're down some stars. And so they need some of these other guys to step up. And I thought Kyle stepped up in a big way today.
Well, this is what you do, man. Like, it has to, pro wrestling has to be a next guy up mentality, right? You cannot, and I think it's been part of the problem with AEW for a minute now, is that the younger guys hadn't been stepping up, and this was a perfect show to give a guy like Kyle Fletcher an opportunity. Because you were going against John Cena and Brock Lesnar, because you had that big monster show on the other end, you knew it wouldn't be probably as big as it could have been. So you can just say, oh no, woe is me. Or you can accept the fact that you have some flexibility now, right? It doesn't, like, the company isn't going to live or die based on this one particular buy rate because there's a giant asterisk attached to it. So why not give a guy like Kyle Fletcher a shot? Someone that could be a guy for you in the future. Like, when Adam Page first wrestled for the title, he lost. He got beat. We told a big story with him. I think that's exactly what you can do here with Kyle Fletcher in the future. Like, I think the guy's freaking got it, man. I really do. Yeah. Like, look at his work the past 4 years. Of where they came from with Aussie Open and what he's at now. And now everybody bitched at when he first came to the company, and he was taking a lot of L's, right? Which is what Tony does when he likes you. He puts you on TV a bunch and lets you lose a lot so that he can kind of rebuild. And like, it's been, you can't say it's paid off because he's not there yet, but you can see it. Like, you can see what he sees in him and how he's coming up. Proto Star is the stupidest nickname in the world. It sounds like an animated series from the early 80s.
So I think I don't know who said it, but I want to give them credit. It was somebody from AEW. So the Proto Star just sounds like a giant space fart. but what a tremendous match. I thought it was. Like, if you're just gonna watch one match from All Out, I would say that's probably the one you need to watch. Was really, really good. So, JD, I had an opportunity to watch WrestlePalooza again because I just didn't have access to All Out without paying for it, of course. And so I was just home. I had the television. Family was in bed. I was like, I guess I'm watching WWE tonight. And I was able to get access like pretty easily. I know a lot of boomers had trouble, but I had it just fine. And John Cena versus Brock Lesnar was just a one-sided beatdown. Brock Lesnar went in there and just beat the fuck out of him. Just they did the same story they did at SummerSlam years ago.
SummerSlam 2014, when Brock just beat his ass over and over.
I think occasionally you got to do stuff like that. My criticism is they already did that with these two guys, right?
So, there you go.
Yeah. So it's like, and it was the debut on ESPN, and you're going head to head with AEW. I would have had them have a good match, but Brock Lesnar was also sucking wind within 3 minutes and was like, he was like both pink and purple at the same time because he is so huge and so jacked. They probably just didn't trust that he could go out there for like 15 minutes and give a good match. So he's like, you know what? Just go beat the shit out of John. He's leaving anyway. And so that's what they did.
Can Cena even give a good 15-minute match anymore? I'm not watching, but
yeah,
the reviews I'm hearing have not been great to his actual wrestling this year.
Yeah. So his heel matches were not any good. I watched several of his heel matches, including versus CM Punk, which I was like looking forward to. Because I was like, oh, yeah, man, reminds me of 2011. That was a great match. Well, they did not have a good match when Cena was heel. Babyface John Cena doing really good. He's had several good matches. He actually pulled out like a decent one with Logan Paul, of all people. But I think the audience, like the crowd heat was there for it. Him and Cody at SummerSlam was awesome. I liked him and Cody versus SummerSlam at SummerSlam. And then he had, I think he had another match recently with Sami Zayn. So he's just kind of like going through like the opponents that he really likes. Had another good match with Sami Zayn recently. So they're doing it. Like he can still pull it out when he needs to. And so, but he just did not know how to be a heel. And you said it perfectly a couple weeks ago. He never fully committed to being a heel. Mm-hmm. And he was the antithesis of Hulk Hogan. Hogan committed, and that's why Hogan, like NWO Hogan, worked so well. But Cena didn't know what he was lost as a heel. But babyface John Cena has been reinvigorated. He's done a pretty good job.
What a shame, too, because like you'd figure a guy like John Cena would have relished the opportunity to finally be a bad guy. We've seen what he can do, and like not so much the Peacemaker show, but when he played Peacemaker in the Suicide Squad movie, he's a dickhead. So yeah. I figured that John Cena would embrace being a heel. The whole thing was, I don't know, the greatest heel turn in the world. Like it was good, but I mean, like it's just weird with Travis Scott standing there for some reason and The Rock. It just all went nowhere. And it's a shame too. It's an absolute shame because it could have been something special, but no one cares. Hunter's an amazing booker, genuflected his image, all that bullshit.
Yeah. And wow, I'm trying to remember what else happened on the show. I don't have all the notes in front of me. The Usos versus Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker was not that good. I didn't think that was particularly very good. Yeah, Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker won. One of the Usos hit Bronson Reed in the back of the chair, and like legitimately, the chair bounced off his back, and he hit himself in the face with it and cut himself hard way. It's fucking gnarly. I was watching it. I didn't know what happened because he hits the other guy with a chair, and then all of a sudden Uso's bleeding and he's bleeding bad. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And then like I didn't find out till like later on Twitter, like they slow-mo'd it, and like he hit himself in the eye with the chair and busted himself open, and now he's in concussion protocol. So
he got hit with a chair.
Yeah, that was pretty gnarly. Io Sky versus Stephanie Vaquero was great. Stephanie Vaquero is the new women's champion. Again, like if you're just gonna watch one match on that show, that's probably the match to go see. The match that had the most crowd heat was CM Punk versus AJ Lee. CM Punk and AJ Lee versus Becky and Seth Rollins. Actually, it was a pretty good match for a mixed tag match. It was like a very WWE style. Went a little long for my taste, but it worked. The crowd was super into it. It also reinforced my opinion that AJ Lee was never really any good. Did you see her doing her fucking Looney Tunes punches and slaps on Becky?
I saw it on Twitter and I had a good laugh. Dude, AJ Lee was never very good, but she was kind of decent in an era where everybody was bad.
Yeah.
Like it was truly like the one-eyed man leading the blind. That whole thing goes like, she's not, she hasn't done it for a decade. So it's like we can expect her to be good at it. But they actually they promoted her to the fact that people in this era legitimately think that she's a legend, that she was some transformative star.
Yep.
And when she was part of the show.
And WWE state media, a lot of the guys on social media that are like 25, 26, you know, they were teenagers when AJ Lee was really popular. Like they not only they believe it, they have been promoting that, like, oh, she's this legend has returned. She's so amazing. I was just like, guys, I was there at WrestleMania in Santa Clara when she had a match. Everybody went to the bathroom. Like this, like she was not that big of a deal back then.
Why do you think Give Divas a Chance was a thing? Because everybody was doing that because the matches stunk. It was just Vince and John Laurinaitis entertaining themselves with big boob girls. Like she's from that era. Like she was her character was the antithesis of that, but it wasn't like they had dynamite matches at the time. But here's the thing, when you have a bunch of 20 somethings working and promoting, like these are the people that were like being spoon fed the garbage at the time, and they believe it. They believe everything. They believe the worst era of WWE wrestling was like amazing. It's like I go on Reddit sometimes, and I look at some of these wrestling things, and every day they post a picture of some shitball mid-carder from the 2000s, and like, what could have been? Like, Mordecai, he could have been something, man. Or the legend of Sean O'Hare. Everybody's convinced the WWE missed out on Sean O'Hare, not realizing that his vignettes were carefully edited and like sculpted and put together, and by the time they actually had a debut, and they had to put him with Roddy Piper because he stunk at everything.
Like they couldn't get Sean O'Hare over with fucking Piper. Like they gave him Roddy Piper, and he still couldn't get over.
Right? Like it's astounding to me how like, but that's just like these people that just they were kids in that era that have like fond memories of awful WWE wrestling. Like I don't look back at 1993 and go, man, Damian Demento could have been something if they'd have got behind him more.
Yeah, Bastion Booger, man, they really missed out on that guy. Like he should have been the champ.
Yeah, Mike Shaw was great. How could WWE have missed out on that guy? Like these people that are just they look at a picture and they don't realize that WWE like carefully crafts those images. And that's why there were so many of them that got cranky. The one guy that did get kind of fucked over was Muhammad Hassan. He got over too quickly, and he wasn't ready for that. He might have been able to have a decent career.
He was talented.
Yeah,
he cut a good promo too. Like he was a hell of a promo.
That's the one guy where I'm like, you know, maybe in a different era where they didn't have the worst idea humanly possible for a guy, he could have gotten over, but nothing.
And then the main event was Cody versus Drew McIntyre. And Cody got the victory. This was a very slapdash together feud. Came together a couple weeks ago. It shouldn't have been in the main event. I think it was in a bad spot, but it's Cody, so they had to put Cody in the main event. Hogan must pose. That's Cody now. QB1 is what they call him. And the match was fine. It wasn't a bad match, but it wasn't a great match. And the problem with it is that Triple H, the god of all booking himself, went on ESPN the day before and said, expect a bunch of surprises, expect this, this, and that. Pulled a whole Jordan Grace, right? And before Slammiversary. And then you watch the thing, and there's not a single goddamn surprise on the show. With one exception. Mean Mark Callis, comes out on his motorcycle and to American Badass. Comes to ringside, sits next to Stephanie McMahon, sits next to Steph, right? And then surprises her with her induction into the Hall of Fame in 2026, which that one actually, like, those are usually, like, fake and canned. That one actually kind of looked real. Like, I think she was, like, genuinely surprised by it. But that was the only surprise in the whole fucking show. People were talking about The Rock being there because it's ESPN and it's Cody, and why would you put Cody in the main event with this slap-together feud? People were talking like Jericho's name was being tossed around, and there wasn't a single goddamn surprise on the whole show. So Triple H, Hitler Hurst Helmsley himself, fucking ruined the whole thing.
I love the fact that people are starting to come around to me saying that he's not that great a booker. He doesn't have that many great ideas. Like, I understand that Cody should close the show. He's the champion. It does seem like – now tell me if I'm wrong here. And I'm just going off general vibes. It doesn't seem like this run with Cody on top is as impactful as the previous run with Cody on top.
No.
Am I,
No, you're 100. You've nailed it. Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah. Because, well, the run just started at SummerSlam, right? So we're what, like just over a month into it. I think this was his first big title defense. I'm sure that they're doing another, they're doing a Crown Jewel in Australia coming up. He'll probably have another one in a few weeks, but
yeah,
John Cena's the top babyface, right? And then the number one storyline is CM Punk and AJ Lee and Seth Rollins and Becky. Like, I can't even express just how captivated the audience is by that storyline. It is fantastic. They've done such a great job with it. That son of a bitch, CM Punk, has never been happier in his life. Like, you can tell. And as far as character work, he's doing some really good character work. And the matches aren't great, but the crowd is hot for him. So that's really all that matters. So he, it seems like he's playing second, third fiddle to behind John Cena and that whole mixed storyline, but they put him in the main event, I think, just to kind of reestablish the fact that he is their top guy.
So what do you do with him?
Well, yeah, they don't really have a good heel to go up with him. Like, Seth Rollins is the top heel, but he is the champion on the other show. Right. So
if you've heard this one before, do you turn Cody heel?
No, I don't think you do. I think that you get another heel hot. I think the guy that should go heel eventually and turn on Cody and challenge for the title would be CM Punk. I think he's a better heel than he is a babyface, but I don't know if they're going to do that either.
The problem with Punk is, though, even whenever Punk's a heel, people don't boo him. And I don't foresee that being any different here.
True.
Like, I think here's the thing, though. Cody's really good, but Cody's like crafted, and depending on where the two of them are currently, I know there has been heat between them in the past. Punk can kind of eat him alive, I think, on a micro. Cody's a good promo, but it's a very massaged promo. Whereas I feel like Punk could actually like be a dick. I feel like Punk could be a dick. What a stance I just took.
Great analysis from JD. I think CM Punk might be a dick.
I think this Punk guy might not be up on the level. I don't know. I think that I do think you say get another heel hot. It's not. I know everything Hunter touches turns to gold, but it's not that easy to get on. Hot. Like, it's not. You don't just say, well, that guy's our best heel now. Like, and I think that you could have had that with Drew, but you kind of like went through it super quick.
They tried to give Drew an out. So Cody was by the announcer's desk, and Drew was about to give him his, the Glasgow kick or whatever he calls it. What the hell's the name of that kick? The drop kick, the single leg drop kick he does. I can't remember the name of it.
You're asking me?
Yeah. He tries to give him that. Cody, the ref, like stops him, and then he pushes the ref out of the way. He goes to do it. Cody moves, and then he kicks through the announce desk. And then apparently, in storyline, he hurt his leg. So that, and then Cody hits him with the crossroads 1-2-3.
Listen up, football fans! You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
So, there you go. But... Yeah, I there was some issues with the broadcast. You know, some people paid $30 for it and they saw commercials. So like, but here's the thing. This new ESPN Unlimited app, the sell of the ESPN Unlimited is that you're paying $30 because you don't have to have cable to have all the ESPN channels. You're getting access to all their linear stuff and all their ESPN Plus stuff. But it's all going to be riddled with commercials, much like all the ESPN Plus stuff was before. So you're just getting the linear stations. So it's supposed to be an extension of that. But people don't understand that. And I'm on their side, by the way, because if I'm paying $30 for a fucking show, I don't want commercials. But they're looking at it. You're paying $30 for the linear ESPN channels.
That's what I'll say. You can't look at it as a pay-per-view. You just can't. Yeah. Because you didn't pay $30 for the show. Paid $30 for a month of access. The worldwide leader in sports. And if you're a professional wrestling fan who only wants to watch professional wrestling, you have to really decide if that $30 a month is worth it. Because to you, you are paying $30 for a pay-per-view, but you can't look at it like that because it isn't. Like, if you just watch ESPN, this is you know, bonus for you. This is just icing.
I am a ESPN addict, I would say. Unfortunately, right now, ESPN Unlimited and YouTube TV, they're not in sync yet. Like, some cable providers are, like I said, Fubo. Obviously, if you have a Fubo account, you have ESPN Unlimited automatically. I think they're going to get that ironed out eventually. Garrett Gonzalez has Hulu Live TV, and so he gets a ESPN Unlimited through that for free. So I think a lot, like, once they start making these deals, I think most people that actually have cable already will have access to it. But if you've completely cut the cord and don't even do streaming cable TV, you're going to end up having to pay the $30 if you want to just watch the WWE or get a VPN, and which I don't know how to use, by the way. People keep telling me. But if you VPN it, you can watch it through Netflix, because Netflix International has all the pay-per-views.
VPN, you plug it in and it sets the computer to, like, the Isle of Man or something like that. I think I just stole some Joe bit doing that.
Yeah.
But, like, you just tell the computer to someone. They're not illegal, but.
But.
Yeah, one of those things.
Yeah. Oh, the thing is, I watch it on my TV. I have the smart TV. So I'm like, how do I get it onto my smart TV? So I need a young to come to the house and just hook it up. I sound like Jim Cornette now, but I just need somebody to fucking do it. Joe keeps telling me how to do it. I'm like, I don't get it. Joe, just drive 12 hours to my house and fucking use my remote and do it. But we're not there yet. So I've been stealing cable my whole life, but I cannot figure out this fucking VPN thing. I don't know why. But, and what I don't want it to do is, like, I want it to say that my Netflix account is, like, overseas, but it can't say that with my YouTube TV account, because then it'll mess up my location thing and it won't be, you can't access YouTube TV overseas. It's tied to your zip code here, and I need my Charlotte news. I need this, like, I need to know what the weather's going to be like. I got to see it.
There's a workaround, but we won't talk about that.
So we were talking through text earlier. You sent me a video of this guy, Andrew Badia. What the fuck is this guy's name?
I don't even know. Some guy on some guy saw someone retweet some stuff before the show, and his proposal. This is not a Tony Khan. This is a random fan proposal, but I thought
this guy, Andrew Bayadala, he's a journalist. Let me just give the guy a shot. I've never heard of this guy before, but I did go to his page.
He's legit.
He's featured in Sports Illustrated, New York Times, ESPN, Yahoo. So he's a media personality, does a bunch of videos, and has an idea for AEW to get ahead in life.
Yeah. So his concept was, he referred to it as AEW One. That would essentially an AEW app that would essentially operate like the old WWE network, where it would be AEW shows and pay-per-views, plus Ring of Honor stuff, plus New Japan, plus CMLL. So all of AEW's, like, sister promotions. And, you know, I guess you could include MLW in that, because they are kind of, you saw Fightland, MJF made an appearance with Hammerstone on there.
Yeah, and Blue Panther is their fucking champion now.
Is Blue Panther the MLW champion?
He's the national open weight, but I made the joke he is the national old and overweight champion. But
that joke writes itself, actually. Well done. and a lot of fans were like, yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I'm like, man, that sounds really cool, but, like, CMLL has an app that they want. They have an over-the-top service they want you to buy. New Japan has this little thing called New Japan World.
They sure do.
Well, it used to make decent money in the U.S. Like, in theory, it's a decent idea for fans. But, I mean, here's the reality of it. Tony Khan does not want to give you pay-per-views. You have to understand this, and you have to accept this. He would rather make, $40 a month with Max and $50 bucks a month with every other one of their partners. Like, because that's still valuable money to AEW. Like, I think that we have to accept the fact that what the WWE Network was actually a bad deal for WWE, and that's why they got out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so here's the reason why the WWE got out of having their own app, and there's two reasons. One, they were on an island, right? And they weren't growing because of that. They were on their own little island, and they couldn't grow. They needed to appeal to a larger mass audience, which is where Peacock comes in, because if you want to order Peacock because you're getting the latest Michael Myers movie or whatever big Hollywood movie's coming out, then you could see that WWE's on there, and now you have access to the WWE stuff too. And so that grew their brand, it grew their product, and JD's made the point 1,000 times, and it's a good point, that very, very, very much is one of the big reasons why WWE got as hot as they did, is because their pay-per-views were so accessible on a platform that a lot more people had than, say, the WWE Network, which might have had 1 to 2 million. Now you're putting it on Peacock, which has like 40 million subscribers. Like, there's an astronomical difference there in exposure, right? And the other reason, it's fucking expensive to manage your own app. Like the overhead costs, the employees you have to hire, the data centers you have to, like, the all of that. It's super fucking expensive. TNA has what this guy's talking about without the sister promotions being involved, right? So TNA Plus is an all-encompassing TNA app. You can get everything one-stop shop. You get their television shows, all of their catalog, all the old pay-per-views. You get the TNA Plus specials monthly, and then you get the quarterly pay-per-views for an extra fee, but you still get those. You don't ever have to leave the app, but they're on an island, right? And they're paying Endeavor. I think Endeavor just sold it, but they were paying Endeavor a fee to manage that app for them. And so they were only, I don't even know if it was a 50-50 deal. I get the feeling like Endeavor was probably taking like the lion's share of the profits from that app, or the revenue from that app, because they were the ones running it and managing it. And they were essentially just producing the content, but still having to pay a lot of the overhead costs. So that's where it gets tricky. And so now you're asking Tony Khan, so here's this idea I have for you that's probably going to lose you some money. And he even in the video, he said, this is probably not the most profitable way to do things. Once you say that to a billionaire, you've lost them completely. So like they stop listening. So Tony Khan,
why do you think Vince fired Barry Osen Wilson? The president of WWE at them. They weren't making money.
Yes. Yes. WWE Network was great for us. I loved it.
Me too.
The greatest thing, like one of the greatest things that ever happened to me in like 2014 when that app came around, because I had all the access to all the old stuff that I just never got the chance to see before. We finally had a place to watch it because I didn't have my videotapes and my DVDs at that point. So it was all online and I didn't have to go and like search for it. It was like all in one spot. It was perfect. It was great. And then all the new original content they were producing, I was super into it. It was good. I would love for AEW to have something like that. It would benefit Mike greatly. I don't think it would actually benefit AEW all that well. I just don't. I think AEW and Max need to get together and get a deal, much like WWE and Peacock, or WWE and Netflix and ESPN, and kind of go all in with Max. But I know Max is in a little bit of turmoil right now, and you know they're for sale, and so you never really know what that future is going to hold. But I think that's the best way forward.
I don't know if turmoil is the word I would use, because we've had other players come out of the woodwork. But as I've said on this show,
Netflix. Now, so people threw cold water on the Netflix thing, and I think that whole story came about because the two execs were sitting together to fight. So, yeah, that's not that big of a story.
But here's the thing, though, is these deals aren't. When these things happen, it's not because there's a lot of traces in the media. They get announced. How often have we said, like, oh my God, this deal came out of nowhere? Because we don't know shit, right? Like, these things just pop. The fact that it leaked tells me that it's not as done a deal as everybody thinks it is. And it's been 2 weeks, and it's not a done deal as of yet. So I wouldn't say HBO Max is in turmoil. I would say they're the belle of the ball. They're a hot commodity. I just watched Superman on there last night. Great movie.
I am once again an HBO Max subscriber as of this week, because Verizon has a deal where you can get Netflix and HBO Max for $10 in a joint deal. So I have it now. So I'm back on HBO Max. So I'm gonna watch Superman this week.
Watch Superman. Dynamite's a much better watch on HBO Max than it is on the TBS app. I'll say it's a much cleaner feed. And you don't have all the TBS issues too, because those issues are Turner issues. They are not AEW issues. So, anyways, like I was saying, I think that HBO Max is in a good spot. They're going to find a buyer if that's what this is going to happen. These mergers I read an interesting thing about business deals that happen and sometimes how they just wind up working out. Mike sent me a very interesting article what a great transition, actually.
Yeah, that is a great transition. Yeah. So a buddy of mine, Blake, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but his name is a pseudonym. Because he actually has like a real job, and he is an agent. I invited him on the show tonight, but he couldn't make it because he's actually with a client at the Giants game. So he was double booked. He originally agreed, and then he realized he was doing the Giants game tonight. So, but he...
Mike and JD show.
Yeah. So I'm just going to call him Blake, but on Twitter, his name is Bobby Axelrod. He's actually had some story. Like, he was the guy before anybody knew about the AAA deal with WWE. Like, he had it like a week ahead of time. And had been tweeting about it and even tweeted Sean Ross Sapp, but nobody knew who he was at first. So nobody listened. And sure enough, he had it. He and I got into this big argument whenever the WWE TNA partnership started, because he said that WWE wants to buy TNA. And I was like, no, they don't. We kind of went at it a little bit. And then we took it to the DMs and we chilled and cooled off, and he explained his position. Well, his position that he's explained to me like 6-8 months ago is exactly the position that came out in Dave's newsletter like a month ago, right? Like that WWE has a deal in place with TNA that they would have to be the buyers and stuff if they were for sale, and like they would have to prove it. And Nick Khan wants it, and Nick Khan wants to put TNA and AAA on Peacock, and they want to get the deal on CW. Like, he's had it all for a while. He mostly writes MMA stuff and does MMA business type articles. But this week, he felt compelled to write about TNA, and he had sent me the article. And it's titled Cronyism at the Crossroads, Anthem's Multi-Million-Dollar Gamble on Carlos Silva. So Carlos Silva is the president of Anthem Sports Group, which is the parent company of TNA. So he is essentially, being the president of Anthem Sports, they don't have like an underneath guy that's the president of TNA. He is the president of all of them. So he's the TNA president, Invicta president, Fight Network president. He is the president over all of them. Well, so in his story, I'm just going to go through, I got some notes here. He says, so the background, so Anthem Sports owns TNA Wrestling, and he is alleging that TNA is hemorrhaging $5 to $8 million annually. Which I don't doubt at all, but I look at the show sometimes and I'm like, how are they spending that money? But I don't know. Sounds like a lot of money, but I don't doubt it. He says that they're hemorrhaging $5 to $8 million annually, but is gaining momentum through a groundbreaking partnership with NXT. And it includes crossovers and events like Slammiversary at the UBS Arena, which drew a large crowd. Yeah. Chairman Len Asper has issued a 1-year ultimatum. Now, this is something that Blake told me a long time ago. It says Len Asper has issued a 1-year ultimatum: achieve profitability or face a sale or shutdown. TNA is negotiating a media rights that could exceed $10 million, making leadership crucial. Recent successes such as the partnership and events like Slammiversary and upcoming Bound for Glory were built by executives who have since departed. Let me add JD back. So he's saying that Carlos Silva is there, and he's taking credit for a lot of the successes that TNA has had. But the TNA success is because of the NXT partnership, which he didn't have anything to do with. Slammiversary at the UBS Arena was not a venue that was booked by Carlos Silva. In fact, the previous leadership group are the ones that actually put that deal together. He is kind of riding the waves and the coattails. That's what Blake is saying in his article, okay? That is his allegation. So he's saying that Silva was hired in December of 2024 via executive search firm Turnkey ZRG, promoted as an independent process. He reports to Len Asper and brings experience from roles at Bear Jackson, which is auto auctions, NFL's Pylon Cam, Professional Fighters League, which is the formerly World Series of Fighting, NBC Universal Sports and World Team Tennis. However, insiders criticize Silva's lack of pro wrestling knowledge. He reportedly struggled with basic terminology. So one of the things that came out, I don't know why this would even come out, like, the guy's clearly not a wrestling guy, but you know the guardrail that TNA used? They used the old school metal guardrails, and he called them the bike racks. He goes, why are we using bike racks as the guardrails? And so, like, everybody, they're making fun. They kind of look like bike racks, though.
Yeah, I've always thought that, too.
Yeah. So that was like one thing that had come out right away. But he doesn't have a whole lot of knowledge. Silva outsourced the key media rights negotiations to CAA, raising questions about his hands-on role. So here's the core issue in the hiring process. The recruiter, Rick Alessandri, who led the search for Turnkey ZRG, is a 30-year friend of Silva from 76 Capital. So that's where they have a partnership there. This relationship suggests the independent search may have been rigged to favor personal ties over qualified candidates. Article points to a pattern in Silva's career, including governance issues during his time in World Series of Fighting, where stability was short-lived. Sports executive recruitment often prioritizes networks and favors over merit. Turnkey ZRG has faced similar scrutiny in other hires, like for the Professional Fighters League, an industry veteran quoted says, "Meritocracy is dead in this business. People aren't hired to build for the long haul. They're hired to make someone happy or to repay a favor owed." So that is a bomb that he just dropped on Carlos Silva specifically, that he was hired based on a good old boy network. And he came in and wiped everybody out. And a lot of people don't think that he's actually qualified for the job. Now, again, this is not Mike saying this. This is not JD saying this. This is Blake saying this. And Blake's done the research and he's talked to the people. I thought his end quote here was pretty good. "With annual losses and a tight deadline, the gamble on Silva is massive." And he gives Napoleon's quote, "In politics, stupidity is not a handicap." And he suggests that cronyism might not derail careers, but could cost Anthem dearly. So they're taking a big gamble on a guy that is an unproven commodity in Carlos Silva. And they did it by using a hiring firm that basically hired somebody that was their friend. That's the allegation here from Blake. What'd you think of the article?
Great article. Really, really well written. I like the argument that was presented, and I kind of agree. I think in the little bits that I have seen, I have not been impressed with what I've seen from Carlos Silva. He very much seems like one of these guys. In pro wrestling, we are often cursed with no talent who find themselves in leadership positions who feel the need to put themselves on television. And he seems to be one of these guys sitting in his cuck chair, thank you, Joe Lanza, wearing his lame-ass TNA hat.
I'm getting one of those hats, by the way. Continue. I'm getting a hat. Continue.
His lame-ass TNA. So, I do. The you and I have a unique perspective on this because we were really covering in probably not their darkest era, but one of their darkest. I think the Pursuit Channel days are probably when they were at their right.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah.
Maybe even when they were just on, was it Twitch? Is that what they used to be on? They just used to be on Twitch for a little bit.
They were on Twitch and Pursuit for almost a year, but you and I came in and did the podcast and they were already on Access.
Yeah. So just after that, but the talent was at its lowest and so we've really seen that company grow, and they do seem like they're on a trajectory to get something good because of the WWE relationship. So yeah. I think that I'm of the mind that I completely agree with everything the article said. Cronyism has existed in business forever. The phrase that it's real. Like, people get jobs all the time. Dude, let me tell you some stories of education. In education, how people, like, if you ever want to get a job in administration or letter of recommendation, they'll write you one so quickly to get you the fuck out of there. Like, that's a true thing that I've seen numerous times in numerous places. So, I mean, it's not crazy to think this is a thing. Now, do I think that and I can't say competent or not, I have no idea, I'm not there day to day. I do think that he called everyone there who knew what they were doing, and now he's riding on the coattails. Right. He can have, whatever happens, I think he's going to have a positive or negative impact on it whatsoever. I think it's only none.
Yeah, so a lot of what's happening is already set the wheels in motion, or the wheels were already set in motion. And so everything after Slammiversary is kind of like, that's that hard date where he can maybe start taking credit for some of the company's growth and some of the decisions that they're making. The TV deal is all on him. That's him. He's working that deal. Clearly WWE is going to get some credit, but he's in charge of TNA, and so TNA gets credit, right? So that would be all on him. Slammiversary was a really big event, but that had been meticulously planned out before he got there. They made that announcement in October the year before, and they actually had, and I talked to one of the people that put the plan together for Slammiversary and talked about like, hey, we're going to start selling ads at this time. We're going to hit the ground at this time. We got these events lined up. We're going to team up with the New York Islanders. We're going to be throwing out pitches at the Mets game. We're going to be doing all this stuff. We bought all this advertising in the local New York market, and it worked well above expectations. It worked really well. He just wasn't in charge of that. So he fired the people that did make that plan and then just continued on the plan. That is true. I heard that before this article ever came out, right? In fact, one of the people that put the plan together, I'm trying to get on the show soon, and I think they're going to come on. So I'm just going to have that conversation. I think I can get them. So what I don't want to do is say that he hasn't done anything good, because I do think he's done some good things. I think he has been really good with the media, I will say. Me and him have never talked before, so it's not like that. He used to follow me, but quickly unfollowed me when he found out that all I'm going to do is shit on TNA's booking. So that didn't last long. But what I mean by being good with the media is he doesn't understand wrestling and how you're just supposed to lie to everybody all the time. And he has just come out and has been extremely transparent. And I just found it to be really refreshing. Like, he came out and just said, when asked about how TNA Plus is doing, he goes, oh, we're doing really good. We're up over 21,000 subscribers now. And he did not know that was supposed to be a secret. And I immediately got a DM. He goes, I cannot believe Carlos told everybody the real fucking number. so like, and then he came out and he said, like, oh, on Access, you know, since the WWE partnership, we've been averaging about 100,000 viewers a week on Access, and they don't actually get the Nielsen anymore. They quit subscribing. They still have the numbers. Those aren't public numbers. He just gave them away, and he wasn't supposed to do that. So, but he's in charge now. So it's like, he's like, fuck it. Like, why shouldn't I tell this number? And he came out and said, I'm going to get us a TV deal, and the price is $10 million. I have literally never heard a sports executive come out and say what the price is of their television show. In fact, that might actually be a bad idea, because now, like, unless he's going in there hoping that, like, people are going to try to bid above that, like, now people are going to try to lowball him, and like, knowing that that's probably the acceptable number. I probably would have kept that one a secret, but still, I really enjoy transparency. He's a very goal-minded guy. I think I like that about him. I am also a goal-minded guy. He leads from the front. I think highly of people like that. He's putting himself out there and wants everybody to know who's in charge. Does a great job with that. Here's where I'm going to insult the guy. He's on TV too much. He's not working angles yet, but he's always in the front row. He's putting belts on people, which is fine, but I think it's better that he stays in the shadows, especially a non-wrestling guy. But this past week on Impact, he was in the front row with an Anthem exec, and Ryan Nemeth went and started got into a shoving match with the Anthem exec, and Carlos was the one to break it up. And was like right then and there, I was like, this motherfucker's going through a table at some point. Like, Bubba Ray Dudley is going to, like, talk it. He's going to convince him the way that Bubba convinced Dixie. It's fucking happening. Like, this guy's going through a goddamn table. And, like, at that point, it's all going to be dead. But my comp for Carlos, and you'll appreciate this, was Kip Fry. With the way that he has been managing the talent, he's even doing, like, after every major event, he does awards. You know, like how, you know, Kip Fry used to do bonuses. But mm-hmm. Kip is actually doing awards. He's just like a TV exec, a former, like, MMA guy. No, not really super knowledgeable of the pro wrestling. You know, Kip Fry, didn't he just work at TBS, right? He was a TBS guy and was working with the wrestling company, but he wasn't involved in the day-to-day. And they brought him in at one point. He was after Jim Herd, right? Herd had left.
Between Herd and Bill Watts.
Yeah, in between Herd and Bill Watts. So, I think the comp, and Rich has made the comp, and I know Rover on Twitter has made that comp. I was like, I agree. I think that's the comp. Except for Kip Fry never really got involved in angles, and this guy's definitely getting involved in an angle at some point.
Yeah, I mean, M-A-R-K is the word. Like, the sport turns into the big arcades. It just happens, like, and thing gets intoxicating. I think they will get it. That's a cheap TV deal, too. If it's $10 million, that's super, super cheap. So, but for TNA, freaking great. If he can get it, good. And here's what's going to happen. Is he'll write that off as a victory, and he'll move on to do something else. Because, like, he's not passionate about wrestling. He can write that into, like, a big career boost and find himself in another place. Because this is how CEOs don't care. Like, this is like, okay, here you go. Here comes this part of JD. Like, we see these people, they just look for the next big deal. Like, the consequences are not their concern. They're somebody else's concern. I make the deal to get us here, and everybody's happy, and then I'm gone. And then they got to figure out that, oh, man, maybe this. Like, that's how all CEOs operate. Like, no one, like you said, no one tries to build to last. It's all about how can the next thing and let somebody else figure it out.
Yeah.
So, but in reality, they've got that Nick Khan. They're going to be taken care of because they're like, they are the bumper to AEW from WWE right now, right? They serve a purpose. And there's safety in that. And I totally understand why TNA wants to exist as that. For a company that has been, that has, his future has been unsure since the day it launched, that's a safe place. Yeah. And I understand why they want to do that.
They're in a really good space because WWE realizes the importance of their existence, right? And WWE is not going to like pillage them like they had done before. And in fact, they're going to help them exist in a greater capacity. And we're seeing it in real time. And as far as the cronyism, I 100% believe the story. I don't have any reason to not believe the story. I do believe in a meritocracy. Just unfortunately, that's just not how the world works. Right. Like, you know how I got my current job that I'm in, I got it on a recommendation from my cousin. Right. So, And I had a military background, and they were hiring military people through a DEI program is what they called it. So I'm the whitest motherfucker on the planet, and I'm a DEI hire, and I'm happy to say that I was. And my cousin hooked that up for me. I had to go through the interview process. I had to have the resume, but I still got the job, right? And I'm okay with it.
I became a teacher because I'm a really good wrestling coach, and I have a background in film and video. And had 20 years in the business, and they started a video production program, and the guy quit. And they were like, "Hey, we got this dude who being here. You want to be a teacher?" And I went, "Huh?" And then since being given the job, I busted my ass to prove that I'm really good at it, and that they made the right. They made a gamble on me, and it's paid off for them. That's my job. Yeah. I don't find anything. See, that's the thing is, I don't find anything wrong. Because again, when you're going to hire somebody, don't you want to hire someone that you trust? Yes. Over someone whose resume looks good. I mean, I think that if I want a general contractor, I'm going to go to my buddies and be like, "Hey, man, who should I hire to fix my roof?" Mm-hmm. Right? And they're going to say, "Oh, this guy is good." That's just the reality of business. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. Now, like I said, I've seen the dark side of that too in education, where people who aren't good at the job are able to fail upward because nobody wants to be around them. And that's a real thing too. But I mean, you can stellar resume and get the job, nail the interview, do everything the right way, and you fucking suck, right? Like, that's a thing that happens too. So I don't have a problem. I was thinking about this reading the article. I don't have a problem with someone taking care of their friends and putting them in positions because they think they can be good at it. I would rather bring somebody in who I think can be good at a job rather than someone I don't know, like an ex-guy.
Yeah, I think the knock on Carlos is that he got brought in despite not having pro wrestling product knowledge, but he got brought in as the Anthem Sports president, which is TNA, Invicta, and Fight Network. And he'd come in with his background through the different TV networks. Now, he does not have a high level of success at like these different places, but we're also talking about Anthem Sports, which is not like this. It's not Paramount, right? it's a much smaller thing. So I think that his experience elsewhere is like commensurate. But him not having a product knowledge of TNA, I think is valid. I do. The previous Anthem Sports president that they had was Richard Schaefer, who was the former president of Golden Boy. Now that's a big time hire. But that guy came in and like his name's already set. He didn't really give a fuck. He didn't last that long. So now you got Carlos Silva coming in, and what I could say is the guy does appear to be driven to succeed. And especially if he's been given a 1-year ultimatum to turn this thing around, if the guy can get the TV done and next year, they're, they're doing, instead of losing $5 to $8 million, they're, you know, with the $10 million added to their revenue stream, you know, maybe if they're profiting $1 to $2 million, I would say that's a win, right? And then you're right, he could probably go right off into the sunset and go to the next project, and then they can bring back a wrestling person to manage the thing, knowing that it's a turnkey company, right? Or they can bring in the next sports exec or whatever. I think they should really copy WWE in the sense they brought in Nick Khan, which was the greatest hire ever in pro wrestling. I think if they could find somebody like NCAA or Endeavor that's got those connections, that's probably the way to go. I should know that they would take the job.
Here's where I'm at. I don't necessarily think I think not having product knowledge is not the worst thing in the world, because you can come in, it happens a lot, where people get hired to work at places and you can invest yourself into it and become really good at it. Sometimes having too much product knowledge can be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't necessarily think that everybody who works in a wrestling company needs to be a wrestling guy. We've seen plenty of quote unquote wrestling people do really shitty jobs.
Yeah.
Right. Especially when it comes to business, because like, why would we assume that someone who spent their life in a wrestling ring would be really good at business?
True. Yeah.
Right.
No, very, very true. When the most consequential president that there ever was, well, first is Vince, right? He never wrestled before he took over.
He was,
Nick Khan would be like, of the last 20 years, he's the most consequential wrestling hire of all time. And he never took a bump, never worked in pro wrestling. He just negotiated deals. Right. Uh-huh. You need those types of guys. You need sharks like that to take the emotion out of it and just be strictly about business. And I think that's another reason why Carlos came in. Carlos came in and he didn't have any issue firing Gail Kim and firing Ariel, the guy that ran it before, and getting rid of Scott DeMore's people because they felt like maybe they're still loyal to DeMore. So Speedball, you're gone. Josh Alexander's gone. They didn't even offer him a new deal. Unfortunately, Ace Austin's gone. I wish he wasn't, but he's gone. Right. So like there, no emotion whatsoever. Like you're either adding to it or you're taking from it. And so you just let all these people go and kind of brought in his own people. And so I think sometimes you need that type of guy.
From a business perspective, I agree with you. I don't think a person like that should be running booking. I think that's what kind of screwed the Dixie era over, was Dixie had this, came from Panda Energy. They had general business knowledge. Right. The problem was it became Dixie's plaything. Right. And then you had all these, you know, lifelong workers trying to work Dixie into making sure that they had a job. And so that became the joke of TNA for the longest time. You need wrestling people telling the wrestling stories. I'm firmly that. But I also think that like Tony Khan came in with a lot of product, a lot of knowledge of the business, but no background in running the side of the business. And for his ups and downs, you can't say the AEW hasn't been a successful company.
Huge.
Right? It's a massive success. You cannot, is it WWE? No. But what is other than WWE? Like, and WWE took 45 years to become what it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think that the scales we have for this are ridiculous. And I don't think you can fault Carlos Silva for the moves that he made. My thing is, who have they brought in that's not WWE NXT? That's not an NXT guy. Like, who? Where's the young – have them watch the show, but are they bringing in an influx? Is TNA got just –
They have been focusing on a lot of ex-WWE talent for sure. But the only ones they have, I would say, that are not ex-WWE would be like Leon Slater, who is gonna be making a lot of money because there's gonna be a bidding war for him once his contract has expired. He's really good. You know, they got the Rascals. I know Zach Wentz did go there, but he started in Impact and went there and came back. So they're doing really good. They got this kid Jason Hotch, who was on the indie scene for a while.
Yeah, but those guys were all there before Carlos. Like, here's the thing: Carlos Silva does this big call. Who have you brought back? Like, are we bringing people in to replenish, or are we just leaning on NXT? Because I think that could be. That could be a detriment to you, because then all – and again, here's where I say this, is because I do think WWE fans will get bored with TNA if it's not something – if it's just something they're going to get bored with in general, because it's not WWE.
Yeah.
Right. It's something – it's just another thing that this the history of this is going to – so my whole thing is, what is doing to ensure pipeline of talent in TNA is established, because you got rid of all the Demore people. Sure, okay, I get that. Who's next? And you can't tell me he's not a TNA guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anybody that's under contract to them is a TNA guy. But who is Carlos Silva specifically brought in? He's I think Johnny Bravo. I think Johnny Bravo and Tommy Dreamer are running that deal. And so I don't think they've brought in anybody. I'm trying to think since January. So there's been some women. There's been like Harley Hudson and Myla Grace, but they're barely on TV. I'm trying to think. You stumped me. I can't think of anybody that they have signed since Carlos Silva's been in the company that is not a former WWE talent, other than a couple of the knockouts that are on like Explosion. I don't think there's any.
So here's what I'll say is going to who WWE for AEW. I could be wrong. Doesn't have its loses its to go bye-bye. Look at Ring of Honor. Like Ring of Honor was gonna the last 5 years. Like, don't foresee that being the move. Yeah. Haven't been relying on NXT to talent. I don't think that's the move. I don't think that's protecting your company. Because now done TV deal, and they're going to stop paying attention to you. Because you're.
I think we lost JD, unfortunately. He cut out. I couldn't hear anything that he said. So I had to. He was frozen. Hold on. Let me see if he's back.
One of my rants that I've ever had. Are you hearing me right now? Can you hear me?
I can hear you right now, yeah.
Motherfucker. Like, my whole thing is, if you're not for your own future, just NXT guys, it's the...
Yeah, no, I'll cut you off right there. I think I get the gist of what you're saying. They got to sign younger talent that are more unknown and groom their own homegrown talent that can be identified with TNA in the future and not just rely on the WWE fireds. That's something that we've been talking about forever. I couldn't agree more. And I wish they would focus on that more. And hopefully they will start doing that again. But that doesn't appear to be the case since January, at least. I know that they've signed some more unnamed females, but we don't really have any of those unnamed like male wrestlers that have been grinding the indies that are just looking for a shot to make it. I don't think they've brought any of them on, but hopefully they will do that in the future, but it's getting late. The show's been a disaster. We're going to wrap it up. That's going to do it for us this week. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. Amen, no rain
from... Hello everyone, my name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and wherever you get your audio.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions of the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Mari Gold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.